Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 11th. I'm Ray Graff. Time for another edition of the Writers Forum. Joining us in the studio today, Barbara Chepitis at JPV Oliver. Lally Davidson was ill. Marshall Karp was otherwise engaged. I believe Stephen Sawicki is fixing a sink. But these two are here. And if you have a question about creative writing, give us a call. What inspires you to write? Dreams? Terrifying visions? Where do you write? How do you write? You want a few ways to become a good writer? We'll talk about it. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or email your writing questions to the panel at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Back after the news. Oh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Say, it's the Writers Forum today. So if you got the writer's block or you want to know how to be a writer, we have people who can tell you. Barbara Chepitis is author of a dozen published novels. She's an expert storyteller, somewhat of an entertainer, I think, too. She's been very entertaining this afternoon. She's a longtime professor of writing and performance. Also with us is Northeast native John Oliver, who writes under the pen name JPV Oliver to avoid lawsuits. He's the author of I Know This Looks Bad, which is hilarious. These days, he is dispensing wry, dry hilarity on Substack. So we'll talk writing today. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Barbara Chepitis, JPV Oliver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks,
Ray. Hi, good to be here.
We had a couple scratches, a couple late scratches. We changed, it's like a racing card. It really is. But now we're here. We're doing a show. Barbara Chepitis, what's happening?
A little of this, a little of that.
Nice.
Let's see. I wrote a kid's book.
Really? What's it called?
I did. Well, it's weird. It's called The Crepuscular Fairies.
Ah. I have most of their albums. But anyway, continue.
I know. I love the word crepuscular.
Right.
And most people don't know what it means.
Forget.
It means the animals that come out first thing in the morning and last thing at night to feed. So they're out at dawn and at dusk. So I just did a whole workup of fairies that are the nocturnal fairies.
Right.
The diurnal fairies, the day fairies, and the crepuscular fairies. And what are they each like?
Without going too far, what are they like?
Well, they match their setting,
yeah,
obviously. So the crepuscular fairies are sort of covered in a rosy glow all the time. And then during the day, they sleep in the leaves. And the diurnal fairies are in charge of taking care of the sunflowers and the flowers that are very open during the day. And then they sleep at night. And the nighttime fairies, of course, are about your dreams.
Barbara, I just wrote a piece on Bulwer Linton, you know, The Dark and Stormy Night.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of his famous phrases was the crepuscular gloom.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So.
Isn't it a great word?
It really is. It yeah. Sounds almost onomatopoeic.
Yes, and it sounds almost like a swear word, but not quite. So I thought that would make kids like it.
The way you describe this, it seems almost like you're describing things that are real. Do you live, yeah, as a writer of some strange stuff, do you live partially in a world of mystical wonders?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do.
Who does the grocery shopping?
I do.
Do you?
Actually, and I do the cooking.
Really?
So, yeah, because otherwise I just sort of float off into space in a purple haze or something.
And, John Oliver, welcome back,
thank
my
you.
Friend.
Thank you, indeed.
Your style of writing is a little different. So do you live in a mystical world part of the time?
100% of the time.
Really?
Yes, and that's down usually to my calmatives that keep me calm during the day. but I've been having great success with this thing. You asked about this, you know, when's the next book? And the answer is it's already out. It's called Substack. It's a subscription page called Loose Life That's L-O-U-C-H-E, louchelife.substack.com. And I usually put up two pieces a day, and people pay to read the stuff.
It's great stuff.
Oh, that's right.
You know, it's fun. It's a fun read. But still, I mean, a book you can hold in your hand.
That is true. But as Barbara knows, there are also other elements to books that are not so much fun, which is publishers and self-publishing and costs and all kinds of things that don't accrue when you have a Substack page.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was, before the show, was looking into sort of how great writers wrote and when they wrote and sort of their working conditions. And so I'll ask you both, before we do that, Kafka wrote at night, 11 p.m., 3 a.m. Sort of thing. Proust at night. Tennessee Williams at night. Kurt Vonnegut started at 5:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And Charles Dickens worked 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., allegedly. Hemingway wrote standing up. who knew, right?
Good God.
You know, we were talking, somebody in the newsroom was talking about, you know, does writing in the rain, does that inspire you? Barbara, what inspires you? Do you have, are you a strict regimentarian?
No, not at all. No, I started when my son was like 6 months old was when I really started writing. And he would go to sleep and I would write. So I would write from like 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And then I'd get up and take care of him and all that stuff. So I developed a night writing habit. But when he got older and I didn't need to do that anymore, I would just write whenever.
And, you know, so many writers, it looks like, looking back in history, you know, they had day jobs. They would write when they could.
Yep.
John Oliver, you know, you were a mouthpiece for big corporations and did PR and things like that. When did you realize, I want to do some creative writing?
In high school.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you do that all the time you were working for the big companies?
No, not all the time, because a lot of it was taken up by what the English call BUMF, B-U-N-F, which stands for bum fodder, which is press releases and that kind of stuff. But you know, you were talking about writers' habits. My favorite was William Faulkner's. And Faulkner would rent a room, and just a bare room, and it had a table and a chair. And he put a bottle of whiskey on the table, and he had his typewriter, and he would hang up sheets of paper all around the room, and he would write this character's name, Joe Christmas, right? And then he would write down all the stuff that Joe Christmas was going to do. And then he'd sit there and drink and type and drink and type. And when he had enough pages done, he'd pound on the wall, and this young boy would come up and take the pages off to the post office to mail them to his publisher and come back with another bottle of whiskey for Faulkner. But there is something I want to say about Barbara's work. One of the fancy things you say in literature is, does this work, does this piece have organic unity? And that's a fancy way of saying, you know, does it hang together? Is it prose that flirts with poetry? Does it touch you? And the opening to Barbara's novel, which is called The Amber, is maybe the best single example of organic unity I've ever seen. It is elegant.
Wow.
And if you don't have that novel, run out right now and buy it after you listen to the show.
Barbara, can you recite it from memory?
I can actually see it on the page.
Okay.
But it's the scene where where Nick is looking at the violin.
Right.
Right?
Right. Mm-hmm. It is so perfectly
and it
sculpted.
Ties everything it's just together later on in the book, because you have to know this feeling. You have to know this feeling that he has for this violin and for the people who passed it on from hand to hand.
What I have this morbid, this morbid visceral fear of performing in public. It has to be addressed by medication, except on the radio.
Really?
And by the way, my radio days predate yours. I managed a radio station in Rensselaer, Indiana, I think during the Truman administration. Anyway, it's not important. The important thing is it went back that far. Now, what's ironic is we would have had a larger audience shouting out of the window, but we didn't know that at the time, so we just carried on.
Yeah.
But
I have that feeling myself sometimes.
but I did want to say to listeners, you know, Barbara and Lolly, whom you mentioned at the top, these people are real artists with words, but you don't have to be. And my hope for you would be just write it down, whatever it is. Barbara wants to talk in a minute here about family stories, which is brilliant.
We will do that.
But whatever it is, write it down. Write whatever your happiest day was.
Now, your style, very different, maybe loosely based on stories that happened to you or embellished to some extent. Do you consider that art?
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Well, then, absolutely. In that case, let's go with that.
All right, let's take a break. You're no help at all. 800-348-2551. All right, let's get down and let's get a little funky here. We'll be back. The late, great Steve Cropper and the Marquees here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. John Oliver is here. He goes by the pen name JPV Oliver. And Barbara Chepitis. And before we get to the phones, Barbara Chepitis, you said you want to talk about family stories for a little bit. So let's do
that. Yeah. I was thinking recently that there are so many stories that I didn't get, that I didn't write down. Fortunately, my mother wrote a lot of letters, so I got a lot of them through that. And now I'm trying to compile a lot just for, not for anything for publishing, for my granddaughter.
Ah.
So that she can know the strange people she comes from.
Sort of the folk history of the family.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yes. And I encourage people to do that. To, if you don't want to write them, make a video, you know, and tell the story. Just so that the people who come after you, because the stories that your family tells inform you who you are.
Yeah. No, you know? It's so true. I mean, all my family from when I was a kid, they're all gone.
Yeah.
And so I have little bits of this story and little bit of the time my grandmother said in the early 1900s, a comet came down and went through the trees.
Wow.
And, you know, I'd love to know that story.
I know,
you know.
I know. And I just recently, my brother told me a story about one of our cousins who, he was on a boat in the Mediterranean, the Italian side of the family. His boat sank, so he's swimming in the middle of the ocean, and a dolphin goes by.
Yeah.
I'm not making this up, okay?
Right, okay.
This is verified. And he grabbed the dolphin, and the dolphin was holding him up. He's swimming on the dolphin.
Come on.
I'm not making this
Aquaman?
Up.
Aquaman?
And you know how dolphins like to follow boats. They like to sort of surf the wake. So this dolphin started following a yacht, big yacht, and the people saw my family person, took him on board and rescued him. It turned out to be the yacht of Sir Lipton, as in Lipton tea.
No way. No,
and he worked for him for the rest of his life. See, I have verified.
Okay,
proof of
all
this.
Right, Barbara.
So now you wonder, you ask me, do I think in mystical terms?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, okay.
Because that's how my family,
sentient.
That's how we get things done in my
dolphins
family. We grab a dolphin. And
that's interesting.
Now,
you know, if you've read John's book, I Know This Looks Bad, there are a lot of historical things from his, I don't know how much of it is 100% true, but it's all, I mean, I guess when you're telling your story, your family stories, you can embellish a little bit.
You can embellish.
I used to drive a beer truck in this town.
Yeah.
And I delivered to gin mills on Central Avenue. And the older guy driving the truck, who was named Red, he said, Red Husky is not my real name. He said, my real name is a Polish thing you sneeze. And Red, we would deliver to the gin mills, and it was customary for the gin mill owners to set you up a beer. You'd make the delivery, drop the kegs in the hole, and then you sign the book in it, and they'd set up a beer. And if they liked you, they'd set up a shot and a beer.
Yikes.
And so I was very likable, and Red was even more likable than I was. And so usually by 11 o'clock, we were well on our way.
Yeah.
So one night, so Red would drink like that all day, but he'd go home at night and drink for real. And I went to his apartment in a basement on Central Avenue, dirt floor, and he was nearly corpus insensate with drink. He was just, like, gone. But he handed me a notebook, and the notebook were his poems.
Oh, wow.
And what I learned from that is everybody listening has a voice. Yep. Whether you think you do or you don't, you do. Mm-hmm. And by writing it down, whether it's family stories, as Barbara suggests, or your happiest day or something that moved you, write it down. And you do that for two reasons. One, you do it because it's a gift to yourself, because you're expressing your voice. And don't be intimidated by the word writing. That happens to a lot of people. Happened to me for decades. Don't be intimidated by that. Just write it down. And if you change mm-hmm. a word, now you're a writer. And the other reason is you're giving, and you touched on this, Barbara, you're giving your friends and family an eternal gift.
Yep.
That people that come after you will read that and say, oh, this is what he was like, or this is what she was like, or this, I never knew that story.
And this is where I got this from. When I wrote The Amber, I thought about that a lot because in my research on Lithuania, which is my father's side of the family, I learned that a lot of my practices and approaches to life come from their kind of spiritual base. And I didn't know that. I didn't know. Before I mow my lawn, I go through and I make sure there's no frogs or snakes around.
Okay.
Apparently in Lithuania, before you plow a field, you're required to do that.
Ah, okay.
I didn't know that. I'm like, I just thought I did it, you know?
Ah, interesting. So ingrained.
Yeah.
You know, the story you just told, John, about Red, obviously a tad tormented in some ways. Okay. As writers, do you have to find that life is something, normal life is something of an ill-fitting shoe, that you're not quite suited for a normal existence?
I don't even know what a normal existence is. My ancestors rode dolphins in the ocean.
Yes,
okay.
Right.
Goethe famously said, and I'm not a big fan of Goethe, but I'll quote him, said that anything can be born but for a series of beautiful days.
Mm.
The point being that as humans, we need to contend. We need to struggle. And there's a joke, a common joke in the comedy world, which is, did you have a nice childhood or are you funny?
Right.
Just don't tell the aristocrats because we got
we don't have time.
800-348-2551. It's the Writers Forum today. Dave is in somewhere in New York. Where are you, Dave?
I'm in Clarence, New York.
You are on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I am a struggling lyricist and also an official member of the Hiram Williams Creators Guild.
Okay.
And I write lyrics, and I love the way that words will actually trip across your tongue, the specifically the spoken word, as opposed to words that are read. So 30 years ago, I had to lay off a helper, and it was a very tragic situation. It led to his divorce. And so the rain on Wednesday left curtains on the faces of the people wearing mud on their shoes. And I have two verses for that. And for the life of me, everything I write after that is no good, it's worthless, it doesn't fit the theme, there's no resolution, and I don't honestly know what to do about it.
What you do is, excuse me, what you do is you write crap. You write stuff that's no good.
You certainly do, yeah, that's true.
Hey now.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said
no,
that.
No, it's fine.
Oh, okay.
He said, I certainly do, and that's...
No, but that's what you do when you have... a beautiful line, a beautiful moment, like the beginning of The Amber, as you said, which I so appreciate. You move on. And it's not all going to be wonderful. Sometimes lyrics are just repetitions of phrases, you know?
Go ahead, John.
There's a wonderful sports writer called Charles Hatton. He's long dead, but he's the guy who came up with the phrase, the triple crown. And they asked him, they said, how did you come up with this elegant phrase that captures the drama of these three big races? And he paused and he said, they just fell out of my typewriter.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times with writers, and I'm talking to the caller, just wait for the words to fall out of your out of your pen, out of your typewriter, out of your keyboard. They're in there. You just got to let them out.
And they don't all have to be beautiful.
And also, Dave, when you're writing a song, who says you have to have a resolution? Yes. Life is not often like that.
That's right.
Just write it, man.
And think of very famous lyricists who's, you know, she loves me, yeah.
Okay. That works.
Yes, four yes would have been too many.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I'll give it a try.
There you go. Thanks, Dave. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Writers Forum today with John Oliver, JPV Oliver, for legal purposes. Barbara Chepitis joins us as well. And we'll go to Zach in Albany. Zach, hello.
Hi there. My question is, I have an idea for a children's novel, but I'm trying to figure out what would be the best way to find an illustrator, because I can write, but I can't draw.
That's interesting. I've been approaching that lately. A good way to find them is through colleges that have graphics programs, and often the students in them are looking for a senior project.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's one way to go about it.
So that's one. Yeah. That's one option.
Wouldn't a publisher be able to put
sometimes
you in touch with them?
Sometimes the publisher will, yes.
I mean, there's certainly lots of colleges in the area. So I could,
I would go there first. It depends on, you know, I don't know. I'm new to this world. You know, I just wrote this very strange children's book. And I have a very strange, couple of very strange illustrators interested in it because they want to draw weird fairies.
Sure.
But other than that, I am not sure.
Okay. What you might do is look around at local authors who do illustrations. And since, because so much of it, the pivots on your book, what kind of mood you want it to have. Is it lighthearted? Is it dark? Is it sunny? And then you have to find an illustrator who works that way.
Absolutely.
Right? So you can't just find an illustrator. You have to find an illustrator who is going to reflect your work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why I was, you know, thinking of just finding one when they say
there's a larger children authors guild. And you could look into that and see if they have any advice to offer.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
But I wouldn't hesitate to look up schools.
All right, Zach, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. When you wrote your children's book, and it's all complete now?
Yeah.
Did you have a target age in mind?
I was thinking in the, 7-year-old range.
Yeah. Why?
Depending. Because it had big words, and it had a little bit of science mixed in, because part of it is explaining the difference between crepuscular, diurnal, and nocturnal, and what animals are associated with those times and why, you know?
Yeah.
So it'll have a little thing in the front outside of the story of the fairies for that. And I like combining... I actually was raised on a lot of science. We had microscopes, telescopes. Those were our toys.
Cool.
Yeah. So I like the idea of combining sort of the weird and mystical with the scientific. I'm going to do another one on amoebas, I think.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Your protozoa was taken.
All right, fair enough.
Paramecium, maybe.
It's another weird edition of the Writers Forum. John Oliver and Barbara Chepitis join us. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. When I was a kid, my father was friends with Mr. Wizard.
Really?
And so we got this deluxe chemistry set, which I'm thinking today... kids aren't getting that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because there's some chemicals in there that might not be the best thing.
Right.
You know? Oh, try this out. Here's a Bunsen burner. Don't burn the house down. John writes in, greetings. I've written 2.5 books, but only nonfiction. A cookbook, one on cheese, but have yearned... Oh, I know this, John. But have yearned to try my hand at fiction. Any suggestions on how to transition? I went to college with John Franzen, but unfortunately nothing rubbed off. And that is from my friend John down in Hyde Park.
When you try your hand at fiction, you know, Barbara, you and I have talked about this.
Yeah.
Excuse me, to some degree, and that is to some extent, writing is a compulsion.
Yeah.
It's not something you say, oh, you know, damn it, I should get up and write today. I guess I'll have to do it.
No.
You want to, right?
You have to.
Because because you want
yeah.
right because you want to express
yourself. I must
yourself.
Write or I will die. Yes.
Right. And so, and so, if you want to try your hand at fiction, there has to be a voice inside your head saying, do this now. And I wanted to say earlier about all this stuff, whether it's lyricism or sketches or whatever it is, don't give up.
Mm.
That is the worst possible thing you could do, is to say, nah, it's not working out. I'm not going to carry on. If you want to write fiction, then just start writing it. Just write it down, and maybe it'll fall out of your typewriter.
Okay.
Yeah, out of your hands. Carolyn Forche used to say, I get up every morning and I shake out my hands and see
right.
what lands on the keyboard.
I just do jazz hands.
Guys, yeah.
My let's see. I've been going in a different direction, going from fiction to nonfiction, and watching that transition with some sort of trepidation. If you're moving from nonfiction into fiction, what I would recommend some simple exercises just to get you jump started. So take one of your nonfiction characters, give them a different name, put them in a different setting. Take your nonfiction character into a fiction character with their new name to a grocery store. Have them meet someone. See what happens
That's
between them.
Yeah. So you have a person, a character in your head,
mm-hmm.
and you probably know much more about that character than you have written.
Yep.
So you know how a character will react, or
yep.
do you?
Well, they sometimes surprise you. I've had characters do things like in the middle of the night. I'm like, no, you're not supposed to be doing that yet.
Really?
Put your clothes back on.
Ouch.
Yep.
presumably, that's not in the kids' book.
No.
Let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. It's the Writers Forum. JPV, Oliver, Barbara Chepitis, and a list of people who couldn't make it. We'll be back. It's 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Writers Forum today, Barbara Chepitis, John Oliver join us today. And John, before we go back to the email bag and then the phones, you wanted to follow up on a point.
I did. And
hang on.
It's a simple one, but it's important.
Okay.
And that is, a lot of times there are many barriers to write. I'm too tired. I'm too rested. The sun's out. The sun's not out. I'm going to write fiction. No, I don't want to. I'm going to write prose, nonfiction. Don't defeat yourself. If you're going to write something down, you're absolutely allowed, since it's your writing, to mix fiction and nonfiction. It's your work. Do with it what you want. Let yourself run a little bit and have fun with it. Because that's going to help you in the long run craft your story all over the place. If you are too structured, if you are too, I don't want to use that big word, but if you are too strict with yourself and say, well, that isn't fiction, so I can't put it in here,
right.
then that's a reason not to write.
Mm-hmm.
Don't follow that reason not to write. Follow the reasons to write, which is going to help you in the long run.
Even if it's lousy, just go ahead.
Especially if it's lousy.
Yeah.
Because it always won't be lousy.
And you're always going to write lousy stuff. I mean, there are going to be days when it's just not working. So write the lousy stuff. That'll get it out of your brain. Sort of like, you know, when you have a bad virus and you have to throw up a lot. And then you'll be clear for what's next.
Well, getting back to the topic we were talking about at the beginning, where is it a regimented thing? And you said
yeah.
no, but on the other hand, you're saying you have to write regardless of whether it's good or bad. So it is in a way regimented, is it not?
Yes. The rule is write, you know?
Yeah.
Whether it's good or bad.
Do you ever have writer's block? We've talked about this before. It's not a thing, right?
No, I have times when I'm not writing a lot. I have times when I'm transitioning from one kind of writing to another, but I don't take it as a block. I just, it's the way I accept it. You know, it's not block. It's I'm doing this now.
You know, when you're on a schedule, like John is on a schedule for Substack. He's turning out stuff every day. When early in my radio career, I spent a year as a commercial copywriter. You had you had to bang that stuff out on a schedule every time. John, when you are, you basically say, I'm doing a couple things a day on Substack. You have to turn it out. Yep. So how do you hit that? It becomes work very quickly.
It doesn't for me, and I take your point. You make a good point. But for me, there's two things. One, I feel I owe the subscribers, and there's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. They're paying their good hard money to read this stuff, so I feel a sense of responsibility. But on the happier side, the world is full of so much wonder and so much lunacy and so much goofiness. For example, I spend a lot of time on word histories, and I do that because they're so unbelievably wonderfully fun and stupid and goofy that the humor doesn't write itself, but almost.
Right.
All right. Fran writes in, my dad was an Italian immigrant. Who two brothers and a sister came here by boat in the early 1900s. The males worked in the coal mines in Scranton. One brother died of black lung. My dad lived to be 98, and in his last years, I would turn on a tape recorder and ask him to tell me all about his childhood and his family. I'd ask questions about his other brothers and sisters and parents, details about where they lived, etc. He would go on, and once he got talking, I'm so pleased that I did that. Now, years after he's gone, I can listen to the audio in his voice, hear all my family history on that side of the family. I didn't write any of it down, but I certainly could put it in writing.
That's beautiful. I think, you know, when I say writing, I don't necessarily mean writing on the page. Right now, you know, now.
Capture the story.
Yeah, capture the story. Yeah. We have the capacity now to write on our iPhones, you know.
When we were waiting in the green room to come in, I told Barbara about my ancestors. They came from Scotland. And they came to the New World from Scotland in 1815. They came because they heard you could drink Canada dry. But anyway, the important thing is they came, and there were so many magnificent stories. And I had an ancient aunt. She was 101 or 2, and she was right there.
Yeah.
And I didn't know enough to ask her.
Yeah.
And that is an eternal regret, because not that it would matter so much to anybody but me, but these people lived lives. They had stories, and you want to tell those stories.
But see, that's the thing. It does matter beyond you. You know, who my granddaughter is a result of all the people that came before.
Right.
She's the next chapter.
Great point.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I'm a result of these crazy people riding dolphins and...
Yeah, speaking of that, Ryan writes, and Barbara's story of her relative stranded on the water reminds me of the story of the man who fell off the Mayflower and was rescued. If you look at the list of descendants, they include Roosevelt's, Bush's, William H. Macy, Dr. Spock, many other notables. That could make for an inspiring story.
Absolutely. And I, you know, here I am.
I have this side hustle I do now. I don't know what a side hustle is.
But well said, though. You sound very youthful.
Thank you very much. And I go around and I talk about George Washington and the two occasions that he intersected with Saratoga Springs. And neither of them were good. And it's an extraordinary, it's a curtain drawn back to his life. And the only reason I bring it up is one of the groups I talked to was the Albany chapter of the Descendants of the Mayflower. And on the head of my children, sitting in that audience, you can see in their faces those people on that boat. Huh. It is the freakiest thing. It is extraordinary.
Wow. Yeah.
And each one has to get up and say, my name is so-and-so, and my ancestor was this, and she did this, or he did this. It was an extraordinary experience.
Well, almost everybody. I mean, I have ancestors who were on the Mayflower. I mean, a lot of people do. Real well.
Oh, come on. Italy and Lithuania.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah, my wife did, too. And we had to double check that they weren't the same ancestor before, you know.
Which would be awkward.
That would be a little strange. Actually, would explain a few. This one from Elizabeth about songs that don't have resolution. Neil Sedaka songs didn't have resolutions. They involve his unhappiness. Neil Sedaka songs didn't have resolution. They involve his unhappiness about breaking up with Carole King. Meanwhile, two songs that came out of that are still being played. Breaking Up Is Hard to Do and Oh, Carol. Isn't that...
Yeah, something.
Peter writes, I have an acquaintance who wrote a small novel and was trying to get it published. No mainstream publisher would publish it, but he found many where you paid up front and they promised to publish and market and everything else. In your experience, are these all scams or are some scams? And how can you tell the difference?
I have direct experience with this.
Okay.
And I can tell you what that was. You have an underwriter at this station called Epigraph. They published my book. It's self-published. I paid for it. They were masterful.
Okay.
They came up with a look and feel to the book, a cover page that I would never, ever, ever have come up with. They are not the low-cost provider, but they are enormous value for money. Now, to the writer's point, there are a lot of people out there who will say, this is stunning. We will be, all you have to do is put up $5,000. We'll put up the other $10,000. Those are lies.
Okay.
It doesn't work that way. But Epigraph is, I had an immensely happy experience with them.
There's a website called Predators and Editors.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Great name.
I didn't know there was a difference.
I know.
Exactly. Wow.
They eat their children, don't they?
Okay.
Anyway. But the site will tell you, you can look up a publisher on it, and they will tell you if they got a scam going. If not, you know, they do a lot of research on it. Very useful website.
I get 5 calls a week saying, this is so-and-so publishers, and we've just seen your book, and we have to publish it.
Yeah.
And you don't even, I mean, don't even bother.
Barbara Chepitis is here, John Oliver, a.k.a. JPV Oliver, and it's the Writers Forum at 800-348-2551. Back to the phones we go in a moment. This haiku from Glenn. How's this? I don't want to die for the very life of me. I just can't say why.
Ooh.
All right.
It's like Woody Allen's old joke. I don't mind dying. I just don't want to be there when it happens.
All right, let's go back to the phone. Cindy's in Belchertown. Cindy, you're on.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm so knocked over by some of the language both of your guests are using today. And I'm someone who has also been so obsessed by the need to write. It's woken me up at night, and I had to carry a pen and a notebook with me because when the voice turned on, I just had to let it out.
Yep.
My question today, especially...
Oh, she faded away. Are you still there? Cindy, we lost just a little bit as you began your question. You glitched out. So start again with the question.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
So my question is, about 5 years ago, I moved into my house, and suddenly I had a need to write about a lost kitten.
A lost kitten?
So the storybook is going to be called Finding Roger.
Oh.
And I'm thinking 4 or 5-year-olds with simple, not a lot of pages, and simple words. How does that strike you?
That sounds like a great book. I'm guessing many children have lost pets, you know, and hope to find them again.
The best writing advice I ever got, and I got it from a guy at Newsweek.
Interestingly enough, when I wrote the skeleton outline of the book, I was hoping that I would find him. Mm. But instead, I found a substitute kitten that comes to me with a lot of stripes in my backyard.
Aww. That's nice.
Now, John, you had some. John has a little advice for you. Go ahead.
The best writing advice I've gotten, and I applied it for decades, came from a friend of mine at Newsweek, a senior guy at Newsweek, and he said, "Your only job as a writer is to connect with the reader," and that's a simple expression. It's not so easily done, but connect with the reader.
I agree totally.
If your reader is a 5-year-old or a 40-year-old or whatever. Your job is to find a way to connect with him or her. That's the job.
And congrats on the kitty cat. By the way, Barbara, you have a new cat, huh?
I do. Mr. Merlin.
Mr. Merlin.
Yes.
Okay.
He's an Abyssinian. They're crazy.
Okay.
So perfectly at home in our house.
All right.
He's getting along with our dog. We have a thing that carries our eggs on the table because we have chickens, we have fresh eggs, you don't have to refrigerate
them. Right.
What he did was he thought it was fun to knock them off one at a time. and they would smash on the floor, and the dog would eat them.
Ah.
So it's like teamwork.
Very
so,
nice.
Yeah, they're getting along very well.
That sounds like a book.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
let's get on
that right now. Brian is in Saratoga. Brian, you're on.
Hey, Ray, John, Barbara.
Hi.
I just wanted to give you a recommendation, Barbara,
uh-huh.
and probably Ray, too. I'm surprised you didn't know.
I know it.
There's a great song by Thelonious Monk called Crepuscule with Nelly, which was his wife. It's on an album called yeah. Monk's Music. It came out in 57.
I know it
and
well.
And when you said that word, it struck a chord. And I just wanted to recommend it to you and recommend
Thanks.
It to Ray.
Yeah,
Jack Coleman Hawkins, yeah. John Coltrane, Art Blakey.
Oh, I got the vinyl.
And while I was on hold, you were talking about the Lithuanian tradition.
Yes.
I also want to recommend a song by Sonny Boy Williamson called Fattening Frogs for
yes.
Snakes.
Yes, indeed. Now, you know what? You got me on both. I have both of those.
I figured, you're such a thesaurus, you've probably forgotten more than I'll ever know.
I'll tell you, man, that's Sonny
of
Boy
music.
Williamson. Thanks for the call. This email from somebody with a phone number and no name, interestingly, says... Oh, God bless it. They send these things as texts. All right, here we go. Illustrators for children's books. There are tons of them
yep.
over here in the Five College area around Amherst, Massachusetts.
There you go.
I know there's an illustrators group. You can look it up. And then there's the Eric Carle Museum of Illustrated Books, which is fabulous, has a great collection, great shows, a bookstore where you can look at the work of so many illustrators and go spend time in the children's book section of your local independent bookstore.
Wow. Our callers are very helpful today.
Indeed.
There's a corollary to all this, and I think it's this. I had a therapist one time say to me, a comedian is somebody who makes you laugh out loud, and a humorist is somebody who makes you kind of grin knowingly and gets inside you. And she said, John, you are a wannabe humorist with comedic ideations. And I said, oh, I know what I need now. I need a different therapist.
No way, but I'm pumped. Charlie writes, when an author uses a quote, famous or not, and writes the author's name below, does one have to get permission from the author of the quote to use it?
No.
No?
No, it depends.
There's fair use.
There's fair use. If they're short enough, it doesn't, sometimes they have like a line, you can use so many lines of a poem, but not more.
The copyright forum will be coming up in the next month or two. I don't remember when it is, but a month or two from now. So if you want to ask that question again, our copyright experts will certainly be able to help you.
It could be in public domain. It could be, so.
Right.
Lots of options.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Only a couple of minutes left. John, what are you working on right now for the Substack thing?
I wrote a piece the other day, I think I mentioned this, on... Edward Bulwer Linton, and it turned out to be there's more there than meets the eye. So if you've ever used the expression the almighty dollar, or a dark and stormy night, there's a whole big long list of stuff. And he was enormously popular in the 19th century, and he's forgotten now. And there's a contest to write the worst opening sentence of a novel, and I am working on that worst sentence.
Okay.
I've got something down that is really pretty bad.
Really? Oh, that's a great thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty
beautiful.
Psyched about it.
Okay.
Carl in Katona, hey, you just made it in. Carl, you're on.
Yeah, great. Listen, Ray, I teach creative writing at the North Salem Library here in New York, and I wanted to suggest a different method of becoming a good writer. I run a writer's workshop, and we have a dozen, 15, even 20 people gather twice a month, and we all write using what we call prompts.
Yes,
prompts.
The one that comes to mind is something like, sometimes a banana is just a banana. And you find out that when everybody takes a prompt like that, you'll really enjoy what everyone else does and learn from them.
Absolutely.
And also really learn about the diversity of the human species and what a tiny little prompt like that can produce.
Yes.
Barbara.
We do pieces that are up to about 1,000 words. And then we have a second group for people who like to write long things, such as book chapters and such, for critiquing as well.
Cool.
That's great.
It's all free.
How do you find out about it, Carl? We're about out of time, but how do people find out about this?
Go just look at all your local libraries nearby, wherever you may live, and someone's going to have a writing workshop. I guarantee it.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. All right, Carl, thanks a lot. Barbara Chepitis,
yes.
put a wrap on it here. You can comment on Carl and then tell us what you are up to, and then we'll get out of here.
Okay. Continuing along with the kids' book and amoebas and things. you never know.
No.
And also continuing my nonfiction journey, but that's going to be a while. I'm
What's
taking my time.
What's your nonfiction journey about?
I have three books I want to write. One is called Off Leash, The Care and Feeding of Our Wild Soul.
Okay. Oh, cool.
One is called Honey from the Bones, The Care and Feeding of Our Ghosts.
All right. And the third one, I hesitate to ask.
No, that's actually that's Chaos in the Classroom, The Care and Feeding of Our Creative Souls.
This is great. You're always up to something. Barbara Chepitis, thanks for being here. JPV Oliver, if people want to get your Substack thing, how do they do it?
They go to, and I'll spell it out, it's Louche, L-O-U-C-H-E, louchelife.substack.com. And it's a fun read, and there's a lot of big words and color photographs.
Okay, and that's probably why I have trouble with it.
Hey, let's just say crepuscular one more time.
Crepuscular. Support comes from Woodland Hill Montessori School, celebrating their 60th year of offering accredited, authentic Montessori education. Info at woodlandhill.org. At East Branch Studio, a design-build firm focusing on energy retrofits, net-zero passive house construction, and pre-designed East Branch homes, eastbranchstudio.com. Thanks again to Barbara Chepitis and JPV Oliver for being here. Thank you for listening. Good calls, good emails, appreciated. Mike Bowen, our engineer. Thank you, Mongo. Good job. Andrea Leong screened the calls today. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow. All right. Well, there'll be no big words. The gardeners will be back. We'll see you, too.